Doom do 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 doom do do.
Hi, plant people. Welcome to episode 64 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Hiya, plant friends. As per usual, I hope you're having wonderfully planty weeks. I am currently in Durham, North Carolina. I will be in Cincinnati by the time this episode airs. I visited an adorable plant shop, the Zen Garden. If you're ever in Durham, check them out. It was so sweet. They had great plant accessories and really awesome plants. Thank you so much to my two new plant friends on Patreon, Andre and David. I so appreciate you joining our community of plant friends. Guys, we already have 72 patrons. I can't believe it. I would die if we got to 100 this month. I have a secret goal that we're going to have 500 plant friends supporting the show, which would make my life, I mean, what I would be able to do with that would be unbelievable. But if we could get to 100, that would be super fun. So if any of you guys feel like you want to support the show and become a plant friend on Patreon, the information will be in the show notes. Huge announcement, plant friends. Our next live Bloom and Grow Radio taping is going to be in, drumroll please, Philadelphia. Plant friends, this is going to be the most epic Bloom and Grow Radio event yet. It's going to be at Urban Jungle Philly on June 24th. Urban Jungle is an amazing plant shop that has like a huge capacity for a Bloom and Grow event. So we can have up to, I think, 50 people. Urban Jungle is this incredible venue, and they are helping me put on an epic event, plant friends. I'm talking botanicals and booze happy hour, but also food. We're going to do an informal plant swap, and we're going to do a live taping of the show. So you seriously do not want to miss this event. If you live anywhere near Philly, it's a Monday night. It's going to be after work, so it's in 2 weeks. The link to buy tickets is in the show notes, and I would advise you to buy your tickets this week because the price is going to continue going up. So they're $25 this week, but next week the price is going to keep going up because we want to lock in as many people as we can ahead of time so we can tell our alcohol sponsors and food sponsors and gift bag sponsors, everybody who's participating, we want to have a good idea of how many people we're going to be working with. But I can't stress enough, I think it's going to be the most epic Bloom and Grow Radio event yet. Come meet some plant friends IRL. It's going to be so fun. So check out the link in the show notes. Before we get to the interview, one more thing I wanted to share. Something happened to me while I was in Durham this week involving this plant community that I just want to say thank you for. I had a hater on iTunes write a pretty mean, spirited review, and I took to Instagram to kind of share vulnerably what was going on, and I asked you guys if you felt like you would feel moved to write a positive review for the show to maybe flood the show's page with positive reviews to get this negative review down the line of reviews so it wasn't the first thing that people saw when they came to the page. And plant friends, I just want to say thank you so much. I couldn't have predicted the response I got to my little Instagram story. 200 of you swiped up and went to the iTunes page. So it takes a while for the reviews to show up. So I don't know how many new reviews there will be, but so many of you DM'd me writing very sweet notes, and I'm just so thankful for your continued support of the show and of me. And the review was pretty mean for a few reasons, but the big thing was this listener doesn't like the fact that I ask really simple, basic questions. And that's like the biggest pillar of my show, is that I am always going to continue asking the most basic questions for the least informed listener, because I think that we all should be able to learn. Those of us who don't have the resources of a horticultural degree, we should all still be able to understand, if we want to, the science going on behind these plants. And I will vulnerably ask those questions for you guys as long as I'm doing this podcast. And I feel like the timing of today's episode is pretty hilarious, because I actually think the timing of this episode is pretty funny after what happened last week with the review and this community, because this episode and this interview with Leslie Halleck, I definitely ask the simplest questions. I actually personally really struggle with understanding the propagation concepts that we talk about. And you're going to hear in the interview, I keep confusing the words. And I was honestly just a little out of it during the interview because we were in the midst of some scary thunderstorms. But yeah, I just think it's very fitting that this is the interview that was scheduled to happen after everything that happened with the review. So anyway, thanks for your support. And I hope you enjoy this interview and all of the very basic simple questions that I ask. And Leslie so generously walks us through. We're so lucky to have people as smart as Leslie come on the show and patiently walk me through these highly scientific concepts. And I'm just so thankful for her patience and for her ability to just simply distill these concepts so our audience can be empowered to better understand the magic that's happening when we propagate plants. And in regards to this interview and this episode isn't going to tell you how to take step-by-step cuttings for a pothos or for a fiddleleaf fig. Leslie and I really wanted to have more of like a basis episode of foundational understanding of what is going on with our plants when we use those techniques. How are plants designed to multiply? How their cell structure reflects these propagation cutting techniques that we can find on YouTube or Google, you know? So this is going to be a great foundational understanding kind of conceptual episode that then if you guys feel excited and moved to actually take some cuttings and grow some roots and multiply your plants, you can use Leslie's book that's just coming out, or you can take to the internet and find maybe some visual guides for taking the proper cuttings. So we really hope you enjoy the episode. Leslie has come out with a new book, Plant Parenting, which is all about plant propagation. I can't say enough wonderful things about the book. We discuss it a little bit more in our interview, but she has broken down not only how plants multiply, but she gives you visual aids for how to propagate every type of plant. I mean, this book is as amazing as her previous book, Gardening Under Lights, was. You'll remember Leslie Halleck, today's guest, because she was my guest for the two-part episode on understanding natural light, which is probably our most downloaded series of episodes. She's so amazing. I'm so thankful to have her back on the show. The links to Leslie and her book are in the show notes. I can't encourage you more to get this book if this episode inspires you, because she's going to really walk you through everything. Also, speaking of Leslie's book, Leslie is generously giving us one signed copy of her book and a packet of seeds for the Bloom and Grow community. So we're going to do a giveaway with Leslie on the Bloom and Grow Radio Instagram account. If you go to the Bloom and Grow Radio Instagram and check out the post that is for this episode, the link will be in the show notes. That will have all of the giveaway instructions. So if you would want to try and get a free copy of Leslie's book, go ahead and enter the giveaway. All right. Now, before I bring you this conversation with the plant lady that I love, I want to talk to you about this podcast sponsor that I love, Bloom Living. Plant friends, Bloom Living is a manufacturer of flower pots and garden accessories that elevate gardens around the country. Their products are made in the USA and are available both online and found at most of our local retail outlets and garden centers nationally. Plant friends, if you are looking to garden outdoors this summer, I hope that last month's episode on container gardening inspired you. Bloom Living really does have a container or an accessory for everyone and every garden, no matter how big or small. Billy and I are loving their bloom bags. We're using them on our balcony this summer. The bloom bags are awesome. They're made of 100% recyclable materials, which I love. And even better, they fold away after the season is over, which is huge for small apartment living or if you live on the East Coast when you just get hounded with snow in the winter. We have our herb garden in their 3-gallon bags, and then we're going to have our tomatoes this season in their pepper planters that come with the stakes built in. So I'm super excited to see our plants bloom and grow in those bloom bags. They also have an awesome selection of balcony railing planters and also bloom bags that fold over your balconies if you have limited space and you want to grow on your railings. If you're looking to add some adorable whimsy to your garden, their garden flamingos are so adorable and easy to assemble. Assemble, and they have just brought so much joy to my space. They come in two sizes, small and big. So I have the small flamingos in my apartment, and I'm going to take the big flamingos to my mom's garden. So we're going to have mother and daughter garden flamingos, which I just think is so funny and so silly. To get your own Bloom Living products, head to bloomliving.com, and that's Bloom spelled B-L-O-E-M, living.com, to find your local dealer or shop online at Amazon, The Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart, Wayfair, JCPenney, Overstock, really any online retailer. I have also included my Amazon affiliate links to the Bloom products that I love in the show notes, which you can also go check out. Once again, that's Bloom Living, B-L-O-E-M, living.com. All right, who's ready to learn about propagation? You hear that slurping, plant friends? That is me on my dregs of my daily dose of greens, courtesy of today's sponsor, Equilibria. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with unique science-backed products that help bring your mind and body back into harmony. I always have loved green juice and greens powders. Obviously, I love plants. I love growing plants. I love eating plants. Plants are good for you. And I have tried most greens powders brands on the market, honestly, at this point. I have to say, I'm really loving the Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens. I might argue it's probably one of the best tasting greens powders I've ever had, and that says a lot because I've tried most of them. The Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens contains an immune antioxidant and detox blend, along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. There's no way I'm eating 35 fruits and vegetables throughout the day, but I love that I'm getting little doses and the micronutrients that are in each of the different veggies and fruits, right? Plus, they're certified organic, which I love. A lot of the competitors are not. I just mix one scoop of the greens powder into my water every day, and I'm shocked at how delicious this powder tastes. It's kind of like apple juice. I started back on the greens powder bandwagon because this spring, in this like season of rejuvenation, I'm kind of rejuvenating, doing an overhaul of my health. I've returned to my workout routine. I'm getting in more sleep. I've recommitted to my morning practice, and I've made this Equilibria Nutri-Greens part of that morning practice, drinking the powder in water in the morning. Plus, I love a female-founded company, right? Don't we all? If you want to try this greens powder, Equilibria is hooking you up with 15% off. Head to myeq.com and use code BLOOM for 15% off Equilibria's daily Nutri-Greens and so many other different products on their website. That's myeq.com and use code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. Leslie, welcome back to Bloom and Grow Radio.
Oh, I'm so excited to be back so soon. Thanks for having me.
I'm so happy to have you back. Our episode on understanding bright indirect light was so helpful. You are such an amazing resource and so excited to have you back for the topic of your new book.
Plant Parenting.
Plant Parenting.
Yes.
Do you want to give us the overview of what the new book is about? And I can't wait to mine your brain for all the info you share in it.
Yes. So when I was thinking about what book to do as a follow-up to Gardening Under Lights, I was thinking about how people would really want to get started. You know, growing indoors with grow lighting is, you know, it's kind of a step up from the basics of growing houseplants and outdoor gardening. And it's a little more technical and it's a bit of a deeper dive. And I included a propagation section in that book. But when I started thinking about what's out there that people are really interested in and I need to get more in-depth information on presented in a non-professional way, I thought propagation, you know, really, and the first thought that came to mind was I need to do a book on propagation for newbies. You know, I need to break it down in a way that's really simple for people to follow step by step without skimping on any of the science, right? Because, you know, I always like to make sure that I'm teaching people some botany 101, but also showing people how to do things with plants in their gardens in a way that's still very accessible. So that's how Plant Parenting, Easy Ways to Make More Houseplants, Vegetables, and Flowers came about. And I wanted this book to be a little more fun, a little more engaging, and really photo instructive. And I go through everything from the sort of basic botany of how plants multiply. I cover seeds, I cover cuttings, I cover water rooting, I cover kind of everything that you need to learn how to use all the basic propagation methods for a variety of different plants. And then I help you learn how to pot them up and how to care for them in the house. So it's kind of a comprehensive yet specific on multiple levels introduction to propagation. And I will say it's not just for newbies. Even for folks that have cared for plants indoors and outdoors for many years, there are a lot of propagation methods that maybe they've struggled with or have never even tried before. That goes for professionals too. So I tried to make it accessible to a really wide audience of plant lovers.
I have so many things to say about your book and what you just said. Number one, I was fortunate enough to get an advanced copy of it. And I do have to say, you made it so visually appealing. Like, it's so fun to look at, just the colors. And there are so many photos, and I'm such a visual learner that I feel like that's so helpful, especially with propagation. I really want to say I appreciate, just as a novice, but I love that your approach to teaching is not just excluding the science because I'm a beginner or because your reader is a beginner. You really do kind of get into the down and dirty of it, but still making it approachable. And that's so helpful because I remember, you know, 3 months into being a plant lady and going to my first plant swap, being so stressed out about not understanding what a node was, but right. Knowing from YouTube that, you know, I watched a few YouTube videos and I knew that I had to propagate my pothos, and I knew that I think maybe I was trying to propagate a peperomia as well to bring to this plant swap, and just being so stressed that I did it wrong. Because I think the issue was I had no idea the overarching, I didn't understand that I was replicating a plant. I knew that I had to take the leaf and I had to cut it and I had to stick it in soil and I had to cut below the node and blah, blah, blah. But like, I didn't really understand why I was doing any of the actions that I was doing because YouTube told me to. You know what I mean?
Right. So I think with any pursuit, whether it be a hobby or profession, sort of the fundamental of learning how to do it well is to learn the language of what you're doing. Yeah. Right. Totally. So you have to learn a little bit of language of botany to understand the plants that you're working with and the best practice methods that are going to make you most successful. So you have to understand a little bit of the botany and the science, because it can give you a lot of aha moments once you understand some of the physiological processes that are going on behind these different propagation methods. You go, oh, now I understand why that wasn't working. It was never going to work, but I didn't know that, right? So you have to learn a little bit of science. But yeah, I took a ton of pictures for this book because, again, like you said, I want to provide the information, but I want to give you visual assurance, if you will, that this is how to do it correctly. And these are the results that you should expect to see.
So that brings me to what I think is the most important chapter of your book, which is the first chapter on how do plants multiply, actually, like what the science is going on there. So can you enlighten us? I can't wait. I just feel like you're going to bring so many of us so many aha moments that you mentioned before. So can we kind of have an overarching idea of what is actually going on when we try and propagate these plants?
Sure. This is where I wanted to lay some fundamental groundwork, you know, about the botany of propagation, right? So, you know, every plant has a mission in life, and that is to proliferate, to propagate, to multiply. So it was important to me to make sure that everybody had a little basic understanding about what's going on when we're talking about seeds or cuttings or different types of plants. And I'm going to throw one of my favorite propagation vocabulary words at you to start off, and that is totipotency. Totipotency. It's a fun word to say too. And essentially that means that's potential. The potential of a cell to differentiate into something other than it is now or that it was originally meant to be. So the most totipotent structure that an angiosperm, a flowering plant, has is what? Can you take a wild guess? And it's okay if you don't know.
The most potent structure?
The most totipotent structure. The thing that has the most potential.
Is it the node?
It's the seed.
Oh, it's the seed. Oh,
think about the seed. Yeah. So a seed, an angiosperm, which is a flowering plant, they flower and make seeds. A seed has all of the potential, right, to differentiate into all the different pieces and parts that make up that plant. The roots, the shoots, the leaves, the petioles, the flowers, right? It has all the information that it needs to do that. But once that plant has germinated and grown, and it's differentiated into different pieces and parts, the leaves and stems, each part of that plant has cells that are, you know, meant to be root tissue, meant to be stem tissue, meant to be leaf tissue. But some of those cells, depending on where they are, also have the potential to differentiate into another kind of tissue, which is what is happening when we are taking cuttings, for example. And it is different for every type of plant. So for example, when you take a stem cutting, and the cells in that stem are stem cells, because you've created a wound and it has sent signals to the plant, those cells have the potential to differentiate into root tissue instead of continuing to be stem tissue. Some plants have cells in their leaves, at the base of their leaves, like when you take a succulent leaf cutting, that have the ability to differentiate into not only just root tissue, but also new leaf bud tissue. So you can grow a whole new plant from that leaf. But it doesn't work that way for every part of the plant, not for every species of the plant. Is that the same? It's different for every species.
So the cells that you're talking about, their mission, I guess, when they're created,
yes,
are they predetermined? Is that like when they're created, they're predetermined and that's how they evolve? Like how do they take on that assignment?
So they have the genetic information within that cell to differentiate into root tissue, right? Or they don't. So that cell has the potential encoded in it already as to whether or not it can grow into new adventitious roots or adventitious shoots or both or none. Mm-hmm. So what you find when you start to propagate different types of plants is that a method that you use to propagate one plant may not work for another plant.
You have to be cutting the right cells to inspire or instigate that growth.
Yeah, that species of plant, the cells in its leaf tissue may not be able to generate a new leaf shoot. It might be able to generate new roots, but it might not be able to generate new shoots. So you have to do a little research about the plants that you want to propagate and grow to make sure that you understand how they can and can't multiply, right? So mm-hmm. I actually included a handy little table in plant parenting that you can quick reference that gives you, of course, not every plant, but many popular plants to guide you as to how you can or can't propagate them. Some methods just might be more difficult, but seeds are obviously, you know, the way that many plants, that angiosperms propagate themselves, right? But mm-hmm. every plant has to adapt in its natural environment, right? And the key there is survival. So that's where your cuttings come into play. So some plants flower and produce seed, but if a piece of stem tissue happens to drop off and hit the ground, it can also root and grow a clone, right? And you were talking about your pilea. You are cloning that plant because it's the exact same genetic information. So that plant has multiple strategies for survival. It can flower and produce seeds and have those dispersed and grow elsewhere with genetic diversity. Or if it's under conditions that maybe are stressful for flowering, it drops a piece of vegetative tissue and that little clone baby roots into the ground and grows anew. So it's about the individual species of plant and what it's able to do in order to multiply depending on the conditions it's under, right?
Yeah. And how many different types of propagation would you say there are?
Oh, I probably can't give you a number off the top of my head, but there are quite a few. So, I mean, obviously you've got seed propagation. And then depending mm-hmm. on where you take cuttings from a plant, there are, you know, I probably cover maybe 10 different types of propagation in my book. I don't know if that's an exact number. I'd have to go count, or you can count when you check through. But there are a number of different methods in terms of where you are taking a piece of that plant from, right? And then there are different methods that you use in terms of materials or equipment, right? So even with that same type of cutting, there might be 5 different ways that you use in terms of equipment and materials to propagate. And all of that comes down to what you discover through experimentation is going to work best for you in your situation, right?
I think it's interesting you brought up too, where I'm trying to make more connections to the plants that I have in my apartment live in nature or come from nature. They're,
right.
they're destined to be outdoors, and trying to make as many parallels as possible there. And propagation, I feel like, is a hard one to actually be like, right, these plants have these backup plans for how right. in nature they would survive, because I feel like propagation feels very sterile. You're supposed to have a clean knife, and you're supposed to have, you know, these fancy glass jars, and it feels very sterile and very unnatural the way we do it. So it's interesting, and I think important to realize, right, we're once again just trying to replicate what happens in nature. We obviously accelerate it with the way that we want to right. reproduce all of our plants, but it is interesting to think about that.
Yeah, these plants are smarter than we are. They figured this all out a long right. time before we did.
A long time
before we did, right? They're masters at survival and multiplication. So while it may seem to you as sort of a new plant keeper that, you know, taking cuttings or propagating vegetatively seems a bit unnatural to you, you have to realize that the only reason you're able to do that is because that plant is already able to do it and has done it many, many times out in the wild, right? Out in their endemic environments, right? So those are survival strategies that that plant has already evolved to be able to do. All you are doing is taking advantage of that ability right. in your unnatural environment. So there's nothing wrong with that. So if there's a sort of a weird, uncomfortable feeling that you get, that you feel like you're doing something unnatural by propagating your plants, you can just let that go. I'm going to assuage you of that green guilt, because those plants are already doing all that without you, right? They're way smarter.
And all we can do is like actually understand what's going on while we do it, right?
Right.
Instead of
right.
just blindly, you know, hacking away at plants. And I guess that brings up, so let's talk about what are the basics we need to know and maybe to do and what not to do when we decide to set out to make some more plant babies for ourselves.
I think the goal that I always try to convey when people are starting propagation is efficiency. What's going to get you success the quickest way with the plant that you want to propagate, right? Ultimately, plant propagation is a race to root before you rot. Okay, that's what I always say.
I love that.
Yeah.
I want a t-shirt that says that.
Yeah, so you got to root before you rot. And so everything you're doing is about efficiency. The method that you choose to propagate a particular plant should be the fastest method, right? And the conditions mm-hmm. that you create and the method that you choose, the materials that you choose to root that plant or germinate those seeds need to be conducive to that seed germinating or that cutting rooting before all of the other organic and environmental forces around it go to work to decompose it. So the choices that you make about how you propagate have to do with how are you going to get the most viable new baby plant before the material that you're starting with rots? Yeah, and that's a question we get a lot. So, you know, for example, woody plants, if you're taking a cutting off of tissue that's become woody and you're not experienced, you might think sticking that into a vessel of water is going to be a great way to root that plant. You will often find that that's not a terribly successful method for woody type plants. Fleshy tropicals, no problem. Pothos ivy, I mean, practically all it has to do is be humid in the room for those adventitious roots to start growing. But a woody plant is probably going to be more of a struggle. It's going to rot before it roots. So not only does the species of plant come into as a big factor as to how you're going to propagate that plant, but the materials and methods that you use also need to be selected based on what part of the plant that you're using and how old is that part of the plant. Because there's big differences between new fleshy growth and older woody growth. And you might choose from the very same plant to propagate those different pieces, younger tissue and older tissue, using different methods so that that cutting roots before it rots. So efficiency and understanding the plant physiology is really kind of the most important thing when you're talking about especially vegetative propagation. But you know, the same thing comes into play when you're talking about seeds. And there are a lot of really cool succulents and cacti that indoor plant keepers might only be able to propagate from seed because they just aren't able to find the plants out in the marketplace, right? So seed germination can be a little tricky for a lot of different species too. So understanding how seeds germinate and some of the things that you have to do to get them to germinate is going to save you a lot of heartbreak too.
That brings up something that I see a lot, and I haven't tried this personally yet, but I actually, Billy recently got me what looks like a tip cutting of a fiddle leaf fig, and it's growing like gangbusters. It's amazing. But I feel like the fiddle leaf is something we see that gets propagated incorrectly a lot, where people think that you, if a fiddle leaf fig leaf falls, which happens a lot because they're very finicky plants, people think they can just stick it in water and it's going to root like a pothos would. And I feel bad when I see people doing that because I know like the success rate of that is slim to none. And there's actually a completely separate tip cutting technique to make the most efficient way to replicate your fiddle leaf.
That's where we get into the territory of what we call blind cuttings.
Yeah, tell me more about that.
Yeah, and that goes back to totipotency. So my favorite little propagation vocabulary word, we were totipotency.
Gotta keep saying it over again.
Yes, totipotentia is the Latin. Mm-hmm. So basically, we go back to needing to understand which parts of which plants are able to produce new adventitious roots. And when I say adventitious root, that means root tissue growing from a place on that plant where roots don't normally grow, right? So along the stem, right? Versus, you know, in the root structure of the plant, or an adventitious shoot. So that's a new bud growth that's going to grow up and become a stem and a new leader on that plant so that you get a whole new plant. And not every part of every plant is able to do both of those things. The ficus is a great example. Fiddle leaf figs are a great example. Certain Hoyas as well. A leaf petiole cutting, a leaf cutting is not going to root, okay, from a fiddle leaf fig. A leaf petiole cutting, right? So the leaf itself, if you don't have a petiole attached, really isn't going to do anything on a fiddle leaf fig. A leaf with the little petiole, and the petiole is the little piece of stem-like tissue that attaches the leaf to the main stem of the plant. That's what drops off a lot, right? So you get that big leaf and the little piece of petiole that you stick in water, and it grows roots. And that's all it's ever going to do, because the cells in that leaf petiole are able to grow new adventitious roots, but they're generally not able to grow a new adventitious shoot. So if you're happy with your one fiddle leaf fig growing in water with roots forever, then fine. Lovely, but it's not going to make a shoot. So what you need to do with a fiddle leaf fig is, actually, you were correct when you said stem cuttings, because there are different types of stem cuttings. With a fiddle leaf fig, you need a piece of stem attached with at least one node. Because the only way that fiddle leaf fig can grow a new shoot is if a leaf node, so the little bump on the stem where new leaves grow, you need a node. So you can take a tip cutting, right, that includes the very tippy top part of the stem, or you can take what's called a leaf bud cutting, which is you make two cuts, a cut above the node and a cut below the node, where you have one leaf attached and a node, and you can root it and grow a new shoot from your fiddle leaf fig that way. And I cover all of those different methods of stem cuttings in the book to show you exactly how to do it.
Let's just do a couple of vocab definitions, because you just threw a lot of great words at me that I want to make sure we all understand. So first off, what's woody? What makes a plant woody?
Right. So when you grow a pothos ivy, that's just a great, easy example to use. You generally are always going to have growth that's very soft and fleshy and green. But if you grow a ficus ali and it becomes a large specimen, it almost looks like a tree, like it's got bark. And the growth becomes very tough and woody. There is more cellulose in it. It's not fleshy and soft, okay, right?
Like my jade plant gets woody too, right?
It can get woody. Yeah. It's not generally as woody as, say, a plum tree, right? But it's tougher and there are less cells, okay, available to differentiate into things like roots and shoots. So there is young, early softwood. Okay, that's what we call softwood, which is your new fleshy young growth that comes out the same year. You can bend it and it's soft and green. And then you get into semi-woody tissue, which is sort of like last year's growth, and it's getting a little tougher. And then you get into woody growth, where really it's kind of hard to bend those stems, and it almost looks like the tissue has gone a little brown or gray, and it becomes woody-like. So those are sort of three different basic categories of growth on a plant that you might take cuttings from, but that would require different methodology for successful propagation.
Got it. Next is root versus shoot. So is root what grows under the soil and shoot what grows above the soil?
Correct. I have a great little diagram of a seed, how a seed grows in the book. And I'll just use this as an example, even though a lot of times you're dealing with houseplants. So a seed is going to have within it the embryonic structures that will get that plant going before it needs to start pulling resources, you know, water and sunlight and everything from around it. It's going to put down a little radical, which is the little embryonic root that's going to come out first, and it's going to grow into the ground, and that is going to become root tissue. Mm-hmm. The little shoot, hypocotyl, is the embryonic shoot, and that's going to come out of the seed next, and that's what's going to grow up and above the soil to become the shoot and the top growth of the plant. So root goes down under the soil, shoot goes up and becomes your stems and leaves. But as we've mentioned, some plants have the ability to grow new adventitious roots along their stems, just like a pothos ivy.
Right. Or you've got like that fiddle leaf is a great example of not necessarily having it be able to do both.
Correct.
I loved that. Okay.
Yeah. So root versus shoot. So a very simple way to think about it is roots go under the soil or under the water, shoots go up.
Perfect. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There. I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test. Because, plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results. Okay, cool. So in your opinion, what is the most efficient way to propagate a fiddle leaf fig? Because everybody wants to know.
The easiest and most successful way is to stick with what we call stem cuttings. And there are a few different types of stem cuttings. A tip cutting, which is what most people are familiar with, is an easy way. And that's really just the tippy top growth. So if you're like topping off that plant, the very tippy top of the leaves with the little newest leaves that are coming out, right? So that's a tip cutting. And then a leaf bud cutting, say you decide to keep going down that stem, you could actually take 3 or 4 more cuttings, leaf bud cuttings, which is, remember, that cut above a node and a cut below the node. And so you've got a leaf and a node in between. That's a great way to do that too. You'll get a new shoot that way. So you can use either of those methods, and that's great for fiddle leaf fig.
Okay. One thing I forgot also to ask you to define is node.
Right. So
and
the node.
Node and petiole.
Yes. Okay. So node is basically the connection along the stem of the plant where a leaf is attached, right? And so usually there's like a little bump there. And sometimes even if the leaf falls off, you still see a little swollen kind of nodule along the stem. Mm-hmm. And that's a node. And it has the potential, obviously, to support that leaf that originally emerged in that spot. But it also has the potential to grow a new adventitious shoot. So when you cut that stem above the node, that plant goes, oh, you have relieved my apical dominance. There's another good vocabulary Ooh. Word for you. So hormone signals, right, go, oh, there's nobody in charge at the top of this stem anymore. I have to grow a new leader. I have to grow a new shoot. And so that little node is able to grow a new shoot. And oftentimes, certain plants will also be able to go grow adventitious roots from those nodes. A lot of plants are going to grow those new roots from the cut that you made on the bottom of the stem. So a node is usually necessary for any type of stem cutting that you're going to take. It usually has to include at least one node, or you may not ever get another shoot.
Okay. So the node, you would say, has a lot of totipotency.
Yes, totipotency. Correct. Yay. Yeah, good job.
So then the petiole.
Yeah. So the petiole is the little structure that attaches the leaf to the stem. Right. So you have the main stem of the plant that's growing up, you know, like a little tree or whatever it is that you're growing, or it's growing vertically, falling over your bookcase, like your pothos ivy. And there's a little stem section, right, that grows out from the main stem and attaches to the leaf. Not all plants have leaves with petioles. Think about echeverias. The leaf actually attaches right directly to the stem. There's no petiole. There's no little connection there, right? But a fiddleleaf fig is a great example of a plant with a petiole. Same thing with an African violet. You know, African violets have the leaf and then that little stem that attaches it to the main crown, that's the petiole.
Got it. So I often think about nodes as like the knuckle of a plant, just kind of,
yeah.
kind of looks like a knuckle. So I feel like, I guess the petiole is also knuckle-like. It doesn't look as much like a knuckle on some plants because it's more of like a longer little connector. They're both connectors. They get the leaf and the stem together.
Correct.
Okay, cool. Let's just dive in to the different types of propagation and how we can do it. I want some of our wonderful plant community to be inspired to make some new plants after this episode. So should we start with the simplest one I feel like is water propagation, right? We've gotten a lot of questions. I put a question in my Facebook group. We got like a billion questions for you to answer today. So can we talk about the basics of stem cuttings, which would be mostly water propagation so far?
So I would call water propagation is a method. It's okay. not necessarily a type of cutting. We use water rooting as a method to do vegetative propagation or cloning. You can call vegetative propagation cloning. It's the same thing because you're taking a piece of that mother plant and you're replicating it. It's exactly the same plant, right? You're just taking a piece away and rooting it. And there are a lot of different types of media that you can root into. And water is one of those rooting medias. So water rooting is a method, not necessarily a type of cutting. The types of vegetative cuttings that you're usually going to root in water are going to be stem cuttings, right? So either tip cuttings or stem sections, which we call those leaf bud cuttings. Petiole leaf cuttings, right? So I think I have a few pictures in the book that actually show little roots coming out of the petiole of African violet leaves. That petiole can go into water for plants that can root that way. The stem tissue can go into water for plants that root that way. And if you're really careful, you can even get away with water rooting succulent leaves, right? Just the very very base of the leaf touching water, not sitting too far into the water. So the piece of tissue that's able to produce new adventitious roots comes in contact with that water. Now, this is going to be most successful for fleshy tropicals, a lot of your common house plants, right? Woody plants, not so much. Sometimes semi-woody cuttings or citrus can be you know, can take a long time this way. So you have to be patient. But certainly water rooting is kind of what I call the gateway drug to, yeah.
The gateway. No, totally. Because I feel like, and also just you see so many pictures on Instagram of all these bottles with all these roots with water. But here's my question about water. Where in nature is a leaf falling off into that much water? Like, to me, it feels like the most unnatural form of replication. You know what I mean?
It's probably the most common.
So
if you think, well, if you think about all the types of plants that are often water rooted, where are they endemic? Where do they grow naturally? A lot of the really tropical houseplants that we grow.
In the jungle where all of our
in rainforests.
Yeah.
In right, that are or they're epiphytes, right? So they don't even grow in soil. They grow in air and they're supported by high levels of humidity. Little puddles and pools of water everywhere. I mean, there are actually,
right.
Yeah. So the whole reason that plants can root in water is because they've evolved to do that in their natural environment. So it's actually very common.
Yeah.
It's just, you don't live in a rainforest and I don't live in a rainforest. So it doesn't seem like the sort of thing that's going to be going on around you all the time. But these plants that you're growing, that is where they're from, or they're epiphytes. They don't even grow in soil, like I said. So, you know, they have adapted to having a piece of that stem or leaf petiole, you know, drop on the ground and there's a little extra moisture pooled up there and bam, I'm going to grow some new roots and root right in here and be happy. So it's not unnatural at all. You are just containing that environment.
Totally.
When you're water rooting in a vessel.
I'm just having to wrap my head around it.
That's so okay.
What about with this technique of water propagation? There, a lot of people have asked about, is tap water okay? Do you need purified water? Like, what's your stance on that?
Look, I think we've had this conversation before. As a professional horticulturist, I'm basically going to abuse everything to its maximum limit. Everything's
right.
going to get neglected. I'm lazy because I have a lot to do and I have a lot of plant projects going on. And so, you know, certainly you can water root a lot of things in tap water and be just fine. Distilled water is often recommended just because it creates a cleaner environment, right? For the plants.
That's what rainwater would be.
Exactly.
Exactly. Back to the jungle.
Yeah, exactly. And I have big rain barrels on my house, or maybe you keep a rain barrel on a balcony or patio. So that's a great way to have rainwater available if you're doing a lot of water rooting. So certainly if you have access to that and it's easy for you, for sure, you know, do that first. But if not, you know, tap water is usually going to be just fine because the goal is not to leave your cuttings in this water forever, right? Because that sort of changes the physiology of the plant. So if your goal is to pot that plant up, then it's really only going to be in that water long enough to develop root initials and start to branch out with side branching roots, and then you're going to pot it up. Sure. If you have access to rainwater or distilled water, that's ideal. But you'll probably find that you can grow a lot of things successfully in tap water, depending on where you are.
Yeah. My plants can't have fancier water than I drink.
Priorities. It's totally your choice.
Totally. So why don't we do some good like 101? I mean, I feel like with the stem cuttings, it's all about the node, right? So what are the best 101s with stem cuttings?
With stem cuttings, size is important. So you want to take just as much of that stem as needed, right, to create a successful new plant without having to burden that cutting with maintaining too much stem and leaf growth without any root structure. So a big mistake I see sometimes with new plant propagators is they take stem cuttings that are way too big.
Can we choose maybe one or two plants that would do best with stem cuttings just to get specifics as we talk about this troubleshooting and stuff? Like what would be a good plant to reference?
Well, stem cuttings are going to be pretty common for tons of plants. So the fiddly fig is a really easy one. Citrus is one. Peperomias. Anything that's kind of fleshy and has nodes on it, multiple nodes on it, you can take a stem cutting from. So lots of your, you know, plants that grow from the central crown, like a African violet, you know, you're going to do a petiole or a leaf cutting. But anything that has stems that grow multiple nodes and leaves on top of leaves, you have the opportunity to do stem cuttings from. So a lot of your tropical houseplants, citrus, ficus, things like that are going to be great to take stem cuttings with.
Okay, got it. So when you say someone is taking one that's too large, what do you mean there? How big is too big in what you were referencing with, let's say, a fiddly fig or a Hoya, what we were talking about?
Right. So on a fiddly fig, rather than taking, you know, a foot long section that has maybe four or five leaves on it, that might be a little tough for that cutting to develop roots while it's still trying to sustain all those extra leaves, right? Okay. So, you know, something a little smaller, 6 inches or so would be better. A general rule for cuttings, if you're taking a tip cutting, is, you know, no more than 2 to 3 leaves. 2 nodes, right? That's a good size. Usually on small plants, you're going to take a cutting that's 2 to 3 inches tall. For a Hoya, for example, you might take a piece that's about 4 to 5 inches long. When you start taking longer pieces and bigger cutting sections, the race to root before you rot gets a little bit tougher, right? So it's a little more stressful for that cutting. Remember, you've cut off its connection to all of its resources, its water and nutrients. It doesn't have any roots now. So you don't want to burden it with too much size or too many leaves. So it's also important, usually when you take a cutting, that you strip off the bottom few leaves. What you don't want are leaves at the bottom of that cutting sitting in water or touching the soil, because what does that create an opportunity for? Rotting. And then that creates a bad environment for that stem that's trying to grow new roots. So making sure that you're not taking a cutting that's too big is kind of a real basic 101. And then stripping off the lower leaves on your cutting is a good practice too, so that you don't have anything that's sitting in the water or the soil.
When you strip the leaves off, doesn't that also give you a larger opportunity for roots to grow out of where those leaves were?
If the nodes that those leaves were once connected to come in contact with the rooting media, so whether that be water or some other type of growing media that you're using. So any node that comes in contact with the water or the soil, yes, that increases your opportunity to create new roots from that node, right? So Maybe one node doesn't grow new roots, but the other one does.
I feel like when I've done them before, I always try and have a couple of opportunities for those exposed nodes to root in case one doesn't take.
Right. And for some plants, you know, they aren't going to be rooting from a node. They're going to be rooting from the stem tissue where you created the wound. Citrus trees are a good example. And I've got some, I think, some good picture examples in the book of some citrus cuttings. Another thing to remember when you're taking cuttings, especially if you're using water rooting or maybe aeroponics or hydroponics, is that some plants benefit from callusing a little bit. You know, they might need to develop a callus at the bottom of that stem before they can grow roots. So, you know, on that citrus cutting, you're not going to see roots coming out from a node. The new roots that you see growing are going to come from that wound on the stem tissue itself. So it's also important to know when you're taking a cutting where that plant is actually going to root and where it's not. And that goes back to, right, it's totipotency. So, and that's different for different plants, right?
Got it. So that's stem cuttings. Let's talk about split vein cuttings. That's where you cut the leaves up and put the leaves in soil, right?
No, that is actually called a non-petiole cutting.
Oh, a non-petiole.
Non-petiole, okay, right.
Let's start
right.
with those.
Yeah, so non-petiole cuttings are really cool. So once you've graduated from stem cuttings, sort of the next thing real quick I'll plug in there are petiole leaf cuttings. And okay. I'll reference back to that example of the petiole leaf cutting doesn't work with a fiddly fig, but it does work with a lot of other plants like peperomias and begonias and African violets. So You can just cut that petiole away from the stem, and it includes the little petiole in the leaf, and that petiole will grow new root tissue. Right? So then now you've moved on to a piece of that plant, the leaf that doesn't include a petiole. There's no more petiole left. All you have is the leaf. Well, certain plants are really crafty and have figured out how to clone themselves with only pieces of their leaf. So Sansevieria, this is a really common way to propagate your mother-in-law's tongue, your snake plant. And African violets. And this is where you actually take a leaf, no petiole, no stem, just the leaf, and you cut it into sections. With African violets, you might just cut the leaf in half, or with peperomias, you can cut the leaf in half. Same thing with begonias or the Sansevieria. And at the base of that leaf section it's going to develop new roots and shoots, right? And you can only do this with plants that have the ability to grow both new roots and shoots from that leaf section. So that's called a non-petiole leaf cutting, right? Now, the split vein cuttings, which are really kind of crazy and cool, are where you have a leaf and you're actually going to just lay that leaf on the surface of some soil or some growing media, having made small little cuts, little wounds along the mid veins that run out through the plants, and begonias are very commonly cultivated this way. So that's really cool. So you're not actually rooting from the bottom cut of a leaf. The vein itself, the cells that are run along that mid vein, have the ability to produce both roots and shoots. And you get these tiny little plantlets that grow right off of the surface of the leaf where you made that little wound along the vein. And that's called a split vein cutting.
If you were to categorize beginner, intermediate, advanced propagation techniques, it sounds like split vein might be higher up there. Like, what would you say would be the best? I know you said, well, water propagation, but also stem cuttings would be a great like entry level for people who haven't done it before.
A tip cutting is what most people are doing when they vegetatively propagate, even if they don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Right? Even if they've never done it before, a tip cutting, whether you're taking it on a pothos or a peperomia or a fiddly fig, right? A tip cutting, which is just that tippy top, you know, few inches of growth that you then water root, whether you're water rooting or you're using in some other inert media or you're using a rooter or you're using core, whatever it is that you're rooting it into, you can do a tip cutting in using many different methods. But a tip cutting, a vegetative tip cutting of new, young, fleshy growth is where most people start. And lots of plants can be propagated this way. A lot of your tropical houseplants, herbs, perennials, tomatoes, you name it. So a tip cutting is pretty much your kind of 101 vegetative propagation starting place.
Mm-hmm. Your gateway drug, like you said.
Yes, right. And then once you start to catch that bug because you've been successful at growing your needle plants from tip cuttings, then people will start to move into what I called leaf bud cuttings, right? Where you're making multiple cuts along that stem and you're taking multiple cuttings, right? So that's mm-hmm. kind of the next stage there. And then leaf cuttings. So petiole leaf cuttings, whole leaf cuttings, right? And then you start to say, I want to experiment even more with this. And that's when you get into your non-petiole leaf cuttings and your split vein cuttings, right? So, you know, those are sort of all the sort of basic, fundamental, simple ways to propagate most of the kind of stuff that I think a lot of your listeners are going to want to start with.
Let's talk about quickly, because this is something I've run into, is Sansevieria.
Sure.
And separating them because of their rhizomes. And I feel like you see the Sansevieria in a glass of water that have some roots on the bottom or separating. Can we talk about that? Because I know a lot of people run into that because Sansevieria is such a common houseplant.
Yeah, well, the cool thing about Sansevieria is that it's really adept at survival and multiplying. There are so many different ways that you can propagate Sansevieria. And you threw in a nice little vocabulary word, rhizomes. So Sansevieria grows by forming clumps via underground rhizomes. And a rhizome is a piece of modified stem tissue. So it's stem tissue that's decided to differentiate. And I'm going to grow underground for a while. I'm going to grow over like a foot over here, and then I'm going to pop up out of the ground with a new shoot. Well, you can actually go underground and take rhizome cuttings because little roots will develop along that rhizome and you can cut it away from the plant. And you'll see those a lot in being water rooted. But the reality is that they've already developed roots. So usually you can just pot those up. You don't even have to put them in water. So that would be called a rhizome cutting. So that's another type of cutting that I cover in the book. But simple division is another method that you can use with Sansevieria, again, because it grows in clumps. You can take it out of the pot. You can plunk it down on your table. You can get out a sharp knife, and you can cut that baby in half. And now you've got two separate plants.
Because that happened to me. I had a Sansevieria way outgrow its pot. I realized I had 10 plants, you know, mm-hmm. 7 plants in one pot. But I noticed with the rhizomes, is there best practices for actually once you're, you know, under the soil and your hands are there, actually breaking it apart and separating? Anything you should steer clear of or know about?
the best thing to do is just to make a nice clean cut. So just make sure that you're using a nice sharp pair of pruners. You know, it's always kind of a good idea if you're growing in, you know, organic material, if you want to sterilize your pruners. So I provide some recipes for how to do that in the book, because what you don't want to do is introduce new bacteria and things to a fresh cut. Now, the great thing about Sansevieria is that they're so tough and so resilient. I don't provide a lot of cautions with Sansevieria. Just use a sharp pruner so that when you pull away the soil to expose that rhizome under the soil that you're going to cut away from the main clump of the plant, just use something sharp so you get a nice clean cut, and then bury the mother plant back, and now you've got your rhizome cutting. Sansevieria are pretty forgiving about a lot of things. So yeah.
I just fall more and more in love with Sansevieria every day. The longer I have that plant, the more I have respect for it, because it's just
And they're about 70 different species of Sansevieria and all sorts of varieties and cultivars. So there's a really big wide variety of colors and forms that you can get. And it really is, you know, such a great plant. I think we talked before in our lighting episodes that they sometimes get the short end of the stick in terms of light, because people think that they don't need anything. So they stick them in the darkest corners of their house where they can often sort of limp by. But, you know, you don't need to abuse your Sansevieria. If you want your Sansevieria to be really beautiful, give it some light and give it some care, and then it's going to be so much prettier. But Sansevieria can be propagated by simple division, by rhizome cuttings, by non-petiole leaf cuttings. They're just really amazing plants.
I can't say enough about it. Now, I want to head into some rapid fire listener questions for you.
Okay.
But just before we do that, best practices for potting up your cuttings. I know one of the listeners' questions was, how long should the roots get before you pop them up?
I usually don't like to quantify it in terms of how long the roots should be. The signal for you when it's time for a cutting to be bumped up, right, to be potted into potting soil or another growing media, is that you have those initial roots that form in the water, right, that are just long and straight. And then once you see side branching roots starting to come off of those roots, right, so you've got the long, skinny main root, and then when it starts to develop root hairs and lateral roots, right? It's actually starting to grow a root system. That's your signal that it's time to pot that cutting up.
Okay. So when there's a system in place, not just one little root.
One straight root that doesn't have any side branches on it isn't really ready yet. But once that root starts to branch out so that it's got more little tiny roots coming off the side of it, that's your signal. If you leave it in water for an extended period of time, you might struggle a little bit come time transplanting. Any ideas why that might be?
I know just people have told me that if you do have it in water for a long time, then you put it in soil. I mean, it's such a shock. It's such a transition for the root to go from full time in water to this soil, which is drier. So you should make the soil wetter for the transition. But I would imagine it would be a huge shock to transfer media like that.
In actuality, when a plant develops roots underwater, it actually uses oxygen differently. So the roots adapt to be able to diffuse oxygen from the air above the water down into the water so that the plant can take it up. It does it differently in the soil. So the actual physiological structure of the root is somewhat different underwater than it is when you put it in soil. So the longer you leave it in water, the harder transition that root system is going to have when it has to now try to absorb oxygen differently in an aerated soil than it did submerged in water. So it's a different process of absorbing oxygen. So there are actual physiological differences between those water roots versus roots growing in soil. So the longer you leave that plant in water, the tougher the transition is going to be. So yes, you need to make sure that the media is moist when you make that transition from water. And for anything that's been in water a little longer, you're going to have to pay much closer attention to it so that it doesn't dry out in the pot, right? So there are actual distinct differences between those two types of roots.
Got it. And this was a question that came up with a lot of listeners. How do you feel, just in terms of media, how do you feel about using sphagnum moss to propagate instead of water?
Well, essentially using moist sphagnum moss is sort of like rooting hydroponically. It's an inert material that holds moisture. just like core, which is cocoa fiber, right? Just like hydroton, which are those clay pellets used in hydroponics. All it is a means with which to hold water and provide some structure for a root system. So for plants that water root easily, you know, pothos, things that have little adventitious roots, Hoyas, that will root quickly, using moist sphagnum moss is a way to do that. So you're going to take your tip cutting or your stem cutting and you're going to stick it down in that moist sphagnum moss, just like you would water or just like you would in some other inert rooting media. And then you just have to keep it moist, right? So sometimes, you know, the difference between water rooting and using sphagnum moss is that that sphagnum moss can dry out. And if you aren't paying attention, then that cutting may dry out too.
Yeah. Okay.
You have to just keep it moist.
Got it. All right. Let's do some rapid fire questions from all these questions.
Oh, so boy.
First off, rooting hormone. Do you think it's important? And also someone had asked, is cinnamon a good use if you don't have rooting hormone?
Okay. Rapid fire answer. So there are hormones inside plants, IAA, that's the acronym for it. We won't get into all the chemical stuff, but that trigger cells to generate root tissue and that stimulate new root growth. Rooting hormones are essentially a synthetic form of those natural plant hormones that when you dip the end of your cutting in it, whether it's a powder or a liquid or a gel, it's going to aid those cells. Right? The hormones are going to signal for those cells to make roots faster. So rooting hormone can be a really good tool to use if you struggle with cuttings or if they are cuttings that are slow to root or are somewhat woody, then rooting hormone is actually handy. And I show some pictures in my book, the difference between some citrus cuttings that I treated with rooting hormone and that I didn't, and the speed at which the treated cutting developed roots versus the untreated. Some people don't like to use rooting hormones because they feel that they're too chemical, right? So there are some natural versions of, they're not rooting hormones, but rooting aids, honey, cinnamon, things like that. They're not hormones and they don't trigger rooting in a cutting. What they do is help keep the growing media cleaner because they suppress bacterial and fungal growth. So they will potentially help slow down the rot before you root, right?
Oh.
So they are sanitation tools. They are not hormones. Willow tea, though, would be one sort of natural concoction you can make that acts as a rooting hormone, but that's the major difference. And so you can buy synthetic rooting hormones. There are organic options as well. There's some gels that I like to use that are organic. And then there are some of the homespun DIY versions like cinnamon or honey that aren't going to trigger root growth, but they're going to help keep the environment a little cleaner for that cutting.
Okay, great. Maybe you could give me some suggestions of your favorite rooting hormones and I can link them in the show notes.
I'll send those to you. I generally don't try to do kind of product endorsements there, but
oh,
I can,
got it. Okay.
We can break down, you know, if you're doing cuttings directly into like a growing media or a potting soil, I like to use powder form rooting hormones.
Okay.
If you are rooting in water or an aeroponic or hydroponic rooting system, I like to use the liquid or the gel form because the gel sticks to the cutting better. And if you've struggled with just basic water rooting cuttings, try using some of the liquid or dissolvable rooting hormone in your water, and that might help you.
Love it. See, the thing with propagation that I feel like is so much fun is like there's always something to try. Like
yes.
You said, there's stuff for every level of plant parent in your book. Like there's always something new to try. Maybe it's trying a hormone. Maybe it's trying a, you know, petiole cutting. Maybe it's just trying something new. I love that. Is there a way to spot a dud, like a plant shoot that won't propagate?
Not necessarily, but there are some key things you want to consider when you're taking cuttings. Obviously, a healthy mother plant, right? You don't want to take cuttings off a plant that's kind of weak or spindly or that's been wilting or that has some disease problems, certainly, because that's all going to transfer to your new baby. So the best way to start out successfully with a successful cutting is to take a cutting off of a healthy plant. It's also a good idea to take cuttings off of plants during their active growing seasons versus when they're dormant although there are some propagation methods that are, you know, that you do on dormant tissue. For most of your listeners, for houseplants, spring and summer is a good time because the plant is really actively growing. And then in the morning time is a good time to take cuttings too, because there tend to be more carbohydrates and their plants are more turgid because they're taking up water. So, you know, really a healthy plant that's not wilted or has pest or disease problems is going to be a good place to start. So you're not going to be able to look at a healthy plant and look at two separate stems and say, well, that stem's going to be able to root, but that's not. You can't really do that, but you can take steps to ensure that you are taking the healthiest cutting you can during the active growing season, right? So that's a good place to start.
Yeah, only in the growing season. And also, I feel like I always take a few cuttings if I can manage to make sure that I have at least a few opportunities for something to root if you have a large enough plant that you can take
right.
a couple of cuttings.
Right.
Okay, the root that I had on my propagating monstera fell off. Will it grow roots from the part that fell off? Also, why did it fall off? So what happens if a root falls off?
Well, there could be, you know, some issues with rot, okay? So there are some things going on in that water or that growing media that have caused that root tissue to die. And so it's fallen off. And so, you know, I would suggest, you know, the water may need to be changed. Maybe you do need to switch to a distilled or a rainwater. You know, there may be something going on in that water that is causing that tissue to decay before it is able to grow new root tissue. So that would be one thing. It could also be from the cutting itself. You know, maybe it's not getting enough light, or maybe it's getting too much light and it's stressed it or shocked it. So there's a bunch of different reasons why a root might fall off. Usually if that water is getting kind of mucky, you know, look kind of mucky and not super clear, you can start to see some brownness, you know, happening around your root tissue and it can fall off. So on that particular type of plant, you need a node, ideally. So if you have another node and that cutting is still healthy, cut off the section of stem where that root rotted from and start over again with clean water. And maybe use a rooting hormone if you're really struggling.
Yeah. What is the sweet spot for light?
There's differences between how you grow seedlings with light. Seedlings need a lot of intense light. When you're doing vegetative propagation, it's the opposite. So you can have your cuttings exposed to light for 24 hours, but it should be diffuse, kind of somewhat shady conditions. So what you don't want to do is take cuttings and put them in a super bright, sunny, hot window, you know, a window that gets hot west afternoon sun, and you don't need to put them under intense grow lights. They need to be sort of back from the window, you know, kind of in your coffee table area, or even back in your kitchen where you get really low light levels. That's fine for a cutting, because that cutting doesn't really need exposure to bright light again until it starts growing an active root system. Once that cutting has started to develop an active root system, then it needs to go back to the light conditions under which that species normally thrives. Does that make sense?
Totally. Let's just do one more. Does the color of the glass, if you're doing water propagation, make a difference?
No, it does not.
No, okay. Because a lot of people say you need brown.
No, it doesn't matter. What matters is the light or the spectrum of light that the top of that cutting that's actually photosynthesizing is exposed to, not what's mm-hmm. under the water. So, for example, red light tends to encourage more rooting. If the leaves of the cutting or the upper stem tissue of that cutting were exposed, say, to only blue light, there would be root growth inhibition because blue light tends to do that. Mm-hmm. But expose that cutting to red light and it's fine. So where your plant is growing roots in that glass under the water isn't as important as the light that the leaves and stem on top are exposed to. So as long as your cutting has exposure to normal full spectrum light or a full spectrum light, if you're growing under grow lights, then you're fine. It doesn't really matter what color the glass is that you use. It's what's happening to the cutting above the water.
Yeah, totally.
Not under the water when we're talking about light color.
I love that. That's so interesting. There are so many other questions that I wish we had more time to ask. I think it's clear that there are a lot of questions about propagation. This is science. This is a really fun new undertaking for plant parents. I also feel like if you are on a plant pause, like I encourage a lot of my listeners to do, and you're looking for some way to like keep your creativity with plants, but you don't want to continue buying plants, propagating is a great place to start. And I do feel like everybody needs to get your book. I know everybody every time I go to propagate a plant, I will be referencing it. So why don't you tell us, I know there are things that we didn't cover that are in your book. Give us the rundown of the book and maybe the fun promo that you and I are working on together and where people can find your book.
Yeah. So I really start from the basics, like we talked about, of understanding how plants work and how they multiply. And then I do extensively cover seeds, and I talk about cactus seeds and all sorts of different kinds of seed germination. And then I get into water rooting. And then I talk about all the different types of cuttings that you can take. And I have pictures of everything. So if you want visual aids, like you said, for how to take all of those cuttings, all of the leaf cuttings, I even cover air layering. So that's probably the most advanced type of propagation I cover in the book. So air layering your fiddle leaf fig or citrus, if you want to experiment with something really cool and new that you've never done before, I do cover air layering. I don't get into grafting or tissue culture because I feel like that those are a little more advanced for what I wanted to cover in this book. And then I do teach you how to graduate your plants, right? How to pot them up, when to pot them up, and good practices for that. I also cover sort of the basic, you know, trials and tribulations of pests and diseases that you might experience with these plants. So I really kind of run the gamut of how plants work and then all the different methods that you can use to propagate, as well as a bunch of resources. So I really tried to break everything down simply but comprehensively for anyone looking to try all of these different types of plant propagation methods and materials and tools. I have a whole section, I forgot, a whole chapter of tools and gear. And I also show you how to DIY and repurpose a lot of materials for propagation as well. So it's a great way to stretch your plant budget. You can be as super DIY and basic with plant propagation as you want, or you can be like me and try every tool, piece of equipment out there. So you really can choose how far you want to go with propagation and how much money you want to spend or don't want to spend. If you want to do it completely free, there's tons of ways I can show you how to do that. So yeah, it's great fun. And that's the beauty of plant propagation, is that it's always something new to experiment with.
Yeah. And with this conversation too, I love that we didn't get necessarily into the nitty gritty of any of the specific methods, because there's really too much to talk about in an hour. But we had a great zoom out conversation of, okay, what's happening and why are we doing what we're doing and what are the different best practices for it? So the next step would be to maybe get your book and
to get the book.
I mean, visuals.
Luckily for all of your Bloom and Grow Radio Facebook, you know, friends and everybody on Instagram, you know, with all these questions, luckily I wrote a book for you. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that goes step by step with tons of pictures. So you can find Plant Parenting, obviously, on Amazon and everything, all of the online booksellers. You can also certainly go to lesliehalleck.com. When you order directly from me, I sign your book and personalize it, and you usually get some extra goodies and things like that, but certainly through your local bookstore and all of those great places. So you can hit me up at lesliehalleck.com. You can also find me at Leslie Halleck on Instagram and Twitter and find the book that way.
Well, thank you for making the book, Leslie. I'm so thankful just to have it personally as a resource. And I know that it's going to be an amazing resource for our entire community. So thank you again for coming on. I hope you come on again soon. Our chats are always so eye-opening.
So short that we can never fit everything into it. And we could talk for hours and days. And I love talking to you. So thanks again for having me on.
Thank you, Leslie Halleck. She is always just such a joy to have on the show. I hope that she continues to come back and give us just all of her knowledge. She is so freaking smart. And I love just how simply she breaks everything down for us. If you are interested in getting her book, the link is in the show notes. It's called Plant Parenting: Easy Ways to Make New Houseplants. I can't say enough wonderful things about it. The visuals are amazing. It's broken down really simply. She's such a smart lady. Her other book is Gardening Under Lights. All of her links, any way to connect with her, is in the show notes. Don't forget about the giveaway. If you want to try and get a free signed copy of the book, that's going to be on the Bloom and Grow Radio Instagram page. And I hope that this information helps you and your plant collection literally keep blooming and keep growing. Wouldn't it be fun if this whole community just tried to propagate a plant that maybe they've never tried to propagate before? And maybe that'll inspire us to maybe send cuttings to each other. I would love that. Or just grow your own collection, you know? It's the growing season, so it's a perfect time to be taking cuttings. Thank you again to our new plant friends on Patreon. If you are interested in supporting Bloom and Grow Radio and helping me continue to bring free episodes to every person in this plant community that I can reach, you can head to patreon.com/Bloom and Grow Radio. The link is in the show notes to sign up and become a plant friend of the show. If you're going to be in Philly on Monday, June 24th, make sure you also go check the link in the show notes to get yourself a ticket to the epic Bloom and Grow Radio event we will be putting on at Urban Jungle, Philly. And thank you, thank you, thank you to Bloom Living, today's podcast episode sponsor. I just adore the Bloom Living products that we're using on our balcony garden this summer. They have a garden container or accessory for every type of outdoor garden space. To learn more about their products, visit bloomliving.com. That's BLOEM living.com, where you can find out where your local Bloom Living dealer is or check out the many websites that you can order their products from. I also have my Amazon storefront linked in the show notes for you to check out my favorite Bloom Living products. All right, plant friends, until next week, keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you are subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're making sure you're subscribed, why don't you head on over to the review section of whatever podcast player you're tuning into and leave us a review. I would greatly appreciate it. If you want to join the Bloom and Grow Garden Club, head over to bloomandgrowradio.com/garden-club to join the planty fun. When you join, you get a free download of the Keep Blooming print that Molly Mansfield made exclusively for us, and you will also get an email with the password to the private Facebook group, which is what I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. It is pretty amazing. For behind-the-scenes scoop, plant tips I learn along the way, and sneak peeks of future episodes, follow me on Instagram at Bloom and Grow Radio. And plant friends, I'm here for you. So drop me a line if you have an idea for an episode, live event, or maybe if you're a planty business looking to sponsor the show. I am always here to help you keep blooming and keep growing. Make new plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the Society yet, Plant Friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up so you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.